back, folks. It's Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Well, we're going from science to something very different. Dale Barron's in the studio right now. Dale is a writer and comic artist, professor in the SWAN program at Morgan State University, and wrote this piece, 4chan, the skeleton key to the rise of Trump. Trump's younger supporters know he's incompetent, an incompetent joke. In fact, that's why they support him. Mm. Dale, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thanks.
So let's begin. First of all, when Mark Gunnery, my producer, senior producer, sent this to me the other night, I read it. I was really fascinated by it. And I went, 4chan? What is that? I've never heard of this thing. What's going on here? So,
sure.
Start from the beginning. I mean, so what is 4chan? But something you got into very young in life, right?
Yes, relatively young, right.
Not that you're relatively old now. But
right, yeah. So 4chan is a website, one of the most popular and successful websites ever in history, though strangely you don't hear about it like Facebook or anything like that. And it started as a forum. If people remember back in the day before Facebook and aggregators like Twitter, forums were kind of the place to be. 4chan was a new kind of type of forum. It adapted this Japanese bulletin board software where instead of registering for an account and you become part of the community, instead you don't have to register and you can post anonymously. And for whatever reason, I was sort of a member of the forum that it was introduced on, which was a small kind of nerdy forum about nerd stuff, video games, comics. I was making comics at the time. That's how I found it. And it was at first that kind of forum, but it took off. It became outrageously popular. The idea that you could post anonymously was outrageously popular. So millions upon millions of posts, millions upon millions of users, you would check it. And it would change completely every few seconds, every few minutes. So many people posting. And it was mostly young men, teenage boys or people my age. And they were posting. And it was kind of like a wired, I back in the day described it as the bathroom stall of the internet. It was, right? It was mostly sort of like a Lord of the Flies environment. You can imagine a bunch of teenage boys all under the cloak of anonymity, and they posted all of this kind of gross stuff, whatever they wanted, and there was sort of this weird adolescent community where you were sort of like taking pride in the fact that you weren't offended because you were an adolescent boy, so you had never really suffered before, and you were kind of playing with all these ideas. So that's one side of it, right?
Right.
And then the other side is that as it grew in popularity, as there were millions and millions of people using it, it was incredibly creative and generated all of these things which have impacted our culture now. Memes were generated, right? That's where memes came from.
Memes came from this?
Yes, right. So,
well, the modern memes. Because memes are an ancient thing, but these memes came from this.
Right. Richard Dawkins coined this term meme, but the internet idea meme that you have a image with funny white impact font and all of that stuff. Many of the popular memes were invented on 4chan. So it was sort of this way that people communicate on the internet now, and these ideas like win, fail, those vocabulary terms those all were invented more or less on 4chan or its progenitors, right? Popularized, perfected.
Invented
on 4chan.
By people who participated in it or by the particular people who started this? What person was
By the hive mind, by this collective, right? By these people who all identified it anonymously, right? Who millions of people, you would post something and if it were funny, it would get popular and it would be repeated in the original Richard Dawkins sense of the meme where you would get it replicated over and over and over again.
This 4chan website, it's still with us.
So, right. It still exists.
Right.
So, as it progressed, it became a place where people started to protest. So at first you would have people raiding other sites and other things and playing practical jokes, and then they started doing it in real life, and they started sort of gaining some political power. And so as it progressed from a sort of prank, it became one group split it off and became a hacktivist collector. They became leftist hackers. But the rest sort of went in a different direction.
So the leftist hackers, that was the birth of Anonymous?
Yeah. So the board, anyone who posts on the board can be called anonymous. And so when a splinter group of leftist hackers began off of 4chan, they were also – they called themselves anonymous. So there's two types of anonymouses here. And they're often conflated and confused, even though 99% – who knows? Some huge majority of people calling themselves anonymous are not the leftist hackers. So that's another confusing element of a – confusing network.
Part of what you wrote about was that there was a connection between the people on 4chan and Occupy that
right.
happened in New York, which we – and all over the country. But New York is where it started, that we associate with the left or the anarcho-left, but the left nevertheless.
Exactly right. Right. So at that time, 2011, what happens is 4chan is very politically active, and there is sort of a splinter group that is super leftist, and they are this hacktivist people, and they go after PayPal and American Express when WikiLeaks happens around the same time, and they say, well, we're being anti-corporate, we're far on the left. But the board itself, in fact, was libertarian. Most people on the board supported Ron Paul. And most of the other boards, and at this point, when people start writing about 4chan, learning about 4chan, there's Wired articles about it, that sort of thing. It gets in the news. Now 4chan is no longer just 4chan. It's all these other sites, all these other places on the internet. It sort of becomes a movement. And so after that period, when you talk about it, you kind of talk about this collective group that's sort of amorphous on the fuzzy on the borders, but it's still a group.
How many people in this group do we think?
Who knows? I mean, it's millions upon millions of people, right?
Who participate at one level or another.
Right. So it was confusing 2011 onwards because now you hear Anonymous, you hear about the liberal hacker collective. But the main group of people who are people, say, 40 and under, my age and under, down to their teens, are mostly male people who kind of retreated into the internet. There's a Japanese term for it, hikikomori, which is like someone who doesn't go out to work, doesn't go to a job, sort of retreats into their internet community, lives there. That's where their social interaction is. That's where – and in my article I say, well, this is really what defines these communities. It's the idea that this is where I live and I kind of don't – I'm not successful anywhere else. And I sort of have a sense of powerlessness about my life. I don't have a job. I don't have any of that stuff in real life, but I sort of have an internet community. I have escapism on the internet.
So Richard Spencer, the Nazi.
Right.
When he was punched in the head.
Right.
Everybody saw around the country. He was wearing a Pepe the Frog pin.
Exactly, right.
Right? And he was trying to say, I'm not a Nazi, and sort of pulling up his lapel to show this Pepe the Frog pin when somebody cold-cocked
right.
him.
Right.
Right? So what's the connection between this neo-Nazi
right.
and this frog pin and this 4chan?
So Richard Spencer, as a fascist, as a Nazi, wears the Pepe the Frog pin. And I talk about in my essay what Pepe symbolizes. So Pepe the Frog is a meme. He's an image created by a webcomic creator named Matt Fury. It's a sad frog. He looks sad.
Yes.
He started out happy, and he gets sadder as he goes, as we progress through the different memes that he's in. And he gets angry. And in the original comic, Pepe is peeing with his pants pulled down, and his roommate comes in and says, embarrasses him. And Pepe owns it. He's like, feels good, man. And he's so pathetic that he owns his patheticness. So this is what the meme means. This idea of owning your own patheticness, owning your powerlessness, and saying, "Hey, that's fine. I'm a pathetic loser. Well, that's me. I'm not going to be anything else ever, right?" That's what Pepe symbolizes, or that's what I argue he symbolizes in the essay. And that's taken on by the alt-right. That's what they believe. They believe they're sort of like a powerless group, and they're going to get power. But they want to kind of own themselves as the outsider, as the loser. And that fits
in. Which is why Spencer was wearing this button.
Right, exactly. So that's what he was about to say before he got punched, right? Who knows what he was actually going to say.
Right.
That's what I imagine he might have expressed. So that's sort of the connection. So, and I argue in the essay that Trump is both, he sort of embodies this, right? He is someone who is an outsider.
But you made the connection in part of your essay here between the older Trump supporters, the boomers, and older people in my generation who supported Trump with feeling themselves as losers in this world, connected to these young losers who are in 4chan.
Exactly, yeah. So I made distinction, three different types of Trump supporters in the essay. There are older generational people who Trump's message that we're going to make America great again, harken back to the 50s, bring it back to what I argue is the idealized form in American politics, this 1950s vision of America.
Which you write that Hillary Clinton tried to get to but couldn't.
Right. She because also spoke about it, right?
I couldn't get there.
Right. She says, Hillary says, I'm going to work for you, the middle class, and she's talking about her father. That's her model, a 1950s businessman, right? So she's kind of behind the curve. She's also saying the same thing. So Trump says, I'm going to do it. And so the older folks say, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I grew up in. That's what it was like when I was a kid, and it was great when I was a kid, right? So there's those folks. Then there is the 1%, the business interest, right, who short deregulation is always great for business in the short term. In the long term, it's terrible, but
they're not losers, right. But they know what they want.
Right.
I know they can get it through this.
Right. Right. And then there's this third category, which is the one that I felt no one talked about, or few people talked about till my essay, which is the younger people 40 and under, around that age, to their teens. Who are they? They're not people who grew up in the 50s and said, oh man, can't I get back to when capitalism gives me a house, a middle class income, all that stuff? They never had that. I've never had that, right? That's not too much of a possibility even for me. so it's they – and I had an education, right? I'm luckier than most people my age. I had benefits that other people didn't have. So I know that there's a teeming mass of people out there who kind of know that they're stuck and there's no way to punch their way out of this paper bag, right? They're just stuck in there. And they feel like, well, I know that I'm not going to – capitalism isn't going to get me all that stuff. They don't have this – what is it, that expression – that America is full of aspiring millionaires or whatever, right? They don't have that feeling. They know that they won't get there. So they instead have a sort of Pepe-style hopelessness where I'm sorry. Where they say, I'm just going to own my loserness, right? I'm going to put someone at the top of the U.S., right? Who cares? It doesn't matter who's president. You can put Donald Trump there. You can put a guy who's ridiculous. I'm just going to make it a prank.
So his ridiculousness is part of the appeal to the folks on 4chan.
I believe so. Now, I might be overestimating them, right? I think that that's the attitude a lot of the time. It might be that they are sort of like the first category where they naively believe that Trump will indeed make their lives great. Right.
You write here that Trump's bizarre, inconstant, incompetent, embarrassing, ridiculous behavior, what the left naturally perceives as his weakness, are to support as his strengths. In other words, Trump is 4chan. Trump is steering into the skid embodied. Trump is Pepe. Trump is boredom embraced. Trump is the loser who has won, the pathetic little frog on the big strong body.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, my thesis is that when Trump acts incompetent, when he acts variable, when he acts ridiculous, the left naturally says, oh, look, look how ridiculous he is. Look how incompetent. And that's not a critique. That's a point of strength for a lot of the right. They say, great. Right. So that's the idea that he is – he represents embracing your loserdom. He represents Pepe. That it's not a coincidence that Pepe was picked up out of nowhere to become a meme. It's not a coincidence that he's then put on Donald Trump's head. It's not random. There's meaning behind it. You can interpret it.
So one of the insidious things about 4chan seems to be this really kind of horrid misogyny.
Right.
Attacks against women.
Right.
That the now famous or infamous Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos,
yeah. Fits right into. So
right.
What's that story?
Right. So Yiannopoulos rose to fame via Gamergate, which was a huge movement on 4chan and where the other sites that 4chan spread to. Gamergate, though the people doing it claimed it was something else. It was sort of a campaign to harass women, a campaign to get women out of video games, which is one of the few places these men, who I argue are into escapism, can escape and live out fantasy lives of effectiveness. They can be effective in their fantasy worlds of video games. And they said, get women out. We don't want indie games. We don't want games that empower women, that have feminism in them. And this is where Milo Yiannopoulos came from. This is how he got famous. And so we are all learning about him today. And if his main thesis, how he became famous, was the idea that you need to reject women. He's an openly gay man, and he says, you don't need women. What you've done when you the fact that you've never had a girlfriend or you can't get one or you're retreating to video games, that's okay. That's your choice, and you've done it. You're smart to do it. So he's sort of a pep talk. He's empowering them. So that's the idea that he represents. And, of course, he also represents all of the other trash and hate speech that is 4chan, right? You can hear that in anything he says. And also somewhat the incoherence, right? He says incoherent, as a lot of it is.
So it's interesting, because especially this day when he is crashing in some ways, we'll see if he comes back up like the phoenix.
Right, yeah. But
that he got his start here in the most kind of vile, sexist way you can imagine.
Exactly right. Women. And you can see that sort of duality that I talk about in Trump. That duality of powerlessness, where he says, he says this horrible thing that, oh, child molesting is okay because I was abused as a victim, and I was empowered. In fact, it was my choice to get abused. So you can see that sort of strange, horrible duality where he got abused as a victim. It's really sad, and he comes back and says, well, that's why it's okay. So that kind of mix of saying I'm empowered because I'm powerlessness is there in the heart of what he is too.
Well, it's just the beginning. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, yeah.
Del Barron, who is a writer, comic artist, and is a professor in the SWAN program, screenwriting
and animation.
And animation program at Morgan State University. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our assistant producer is Calvin Perry. Our production assistant is Nadia Ramlikar. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Will Matthews of Clean Cuts. Please send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. Podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. Your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner.